Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for November 23rd. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy? Good morning.
Good morning. What's happening? We're free. We're free at last.
It is the official end of the baseball season 2015.
It is indeed. Well done, baseball season.
Yeah, it was really enjoyable. I really had a good time, and except for this final day of the Premier 12, it was really good and exciting. I guess we had a downer in the Japan series, sort of, because it ended so quickly. And like I said, when I saw you at Tokyo Dome on Thursday, I think we're going to watch the actual final that night, and that the final day was going to be kind of boring, and that's exactly what happened.
Oh, I'm sorry. I attributed that comment to Jason Koskrie, so my mistake. I knew somebody told me that. As I told you, my memory is good for a few seconds, and then it just sort of flickers away.
You think it lasts a few seconds, do you? All right. Well, on this week's show, we've got
I'm an optimist, man.
We've got an interview with Team USA manager Willie Randolph, and we're going to talk about the Premier 12 and a little bit more, so let's start swinging.
We ring the bases!
Okay, well, I was at Tokyo Dome on Wednesday and Thursday, and on Thursday I had a chance to talk to Willie Randolph and Anthony Sanders, former Yokohama Bay star, and we talked about Japan, and we talked about Japanese baseball and other things, Premier 12, and I don't want to go into great detail now, but, you know, there's a huge gap between Japan and the rest of the world when it came to preparing for this tournament. I won't say the rest of the world, but when you talk to Mexico manager Mike Brito and U.S. manager Willie Randolph about their player selection and their camp, it's like it's like the difference between riding on the Shinkansen and riding on the
on a bike.
Rail at Disneyland.
The monorail, all right. At least you're in a train.
True enough. They are on the same, in the same dimension.
Same mode of transportation.
They're just at different speeds and with different amounts of infrastructure.
Right. Okay.
So let's hear what Mr. Randolph had to say.
Yeah, first of all, welcome back to Japan, and glad you could come. And now you're managing the U.S. team this time. And how does it feel when you're named manager?
Well, it was a pleasant surprise. They called me about it. You know, I've done a lot of things in the game, but never managed the USA team. I did the WBC as third base coach, and that was a big experience for me. But I was really excited about it, and I was looking forward to, getting the challenge going.
That was in 2009?
With the WBC?
Yeah.
No, that was 13? That was 13. Yeah, the last one.
They
played.
Yeah. We didn't see the U.S. that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, first of all, you played Japan in Group B. In fact, you played all these teams in Group B. And what was your impression of the Japanese team?
No, I've been impressed from day one. I mean, I love the way they play the game. You know, they play a solid baseball, and they're going to be very competitive. So we're looking forward to the challenge. But
you knew that from the beginning?
Oh, yeah, I knew that. It was nothing surprising. I didn't have to know that to see. I mean, they have different players, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I knew going in that they were going to be very fundamentally sound, and that they're going to put together a nice team. So, again, when you play in a tournament like this, you really can't focus too much on one particular group, you know, because in a sudden death situation, anything can happen. So whether it's the Koreans or Taiwan or the Puerto Ricans or the Dominicans, you just really got to execute your game plan, you know, and then be leery of, you know, the big boys, you know what I'm saying? But we don't really go into this thinking that we got to play this team, that team. I mean, Korea might win today, so I'm going to play them. But whoever we play is going to be a challenge, and we're looking forward just to beating wherever we need to beat.
Okay, so the approach coming is for the hitters is more or less see the ball, hit the ball, because, well, you don't know what's coming.
Yeah, you don't. But we have some scouting reports, and we have some film. Not a lot, but for the most part, if you stay within yourself and attack the way you're going to attack, then everything takes care of itself. And you hit mistakes, really, and more than anything. You know?
Okay, now, when you were a player, the impression of Japan from the major leagues was probably vastly different than it is now. How's it changed when you think of Japanese baseball maybe 20 years ago when people told you they played in Japan?
Well, again, I've been very, very impressed with the progress and what they've been doing. Even some of the major league players that have come over to states to play. You know, I can name Ichiro, I played Matsui and all these guys, just tremendous players. So for me, it's not like it's a surprise anymore. You know what I mean? We can talk about it, but for me, these guys are solid, solid ball players. And so when you play them, you have your work cut out for you.
Okay. What about some of the other players that impressed you in the tournament so far and the overall experience?
Again, it's really kind of like just, you know, you don't really notice that. You just want to win a game. You want to get in and out. And you're more concerned about your guys, you know, us executing whatever. I mean, there's some players where you kind of go, wow, there's one of the Korean hitters I really like, the third or fourth hitter. I don't know his name.
Park.
Yeah,
he's the guy who's going to go to the Twins.
Very impressive. He's signed with the Twins, really?
They bid on him.
Very impressive. So that stuff jumps out at you or whatever, you know. And we only saw Japan once.
Right.
And again, I was very impressed with some of their arms, some power arms. Mm-hmm. I didn't really realize that their relief pitchers had really good velocity on their arms, you know. So impressive, man. I a lot of respect for how they play. And like I said, we really got a big challenge ahead of us.
Now, you also had a big challenge in terms of team selection. So what were some of your priorities?
Well, that was... You wouldn't believe how it went. Yeah, I literally did not know who my team was until I got here. I knew their names, but I knew nothing. We came together quick. A lot of respect for these kids and how they went about their business. But my coaching staff worked our butt off. But literally, up until the last week, we only had 24 guys.
Okay.
So we added 3 or 4 guys at the end. So believe me, it was a total helter-skelter. And I'm very pleasantly surprised with the attitude of my players, the pride that they exhibit, wanting to be here. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is more important. Talent will take you a long way. But I think that pride is just as important, I think, you know.
Okay, what's the most important thing when you tell your players, when the first time you met your players, what was the thing you wanted to instill in them or remind them?
Check your ego at the door. All right. That's for sure.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time. The time was difficult to manage because the U.S. team got the wrong memo about the start of their practice.
The wrong memo, or read the memo wrong, or the memo was wrong. That's probably more like it.
We got the time anyway. The time was done, and they were supposed to be practicing at 11:30, and they didn't show up until noon, and were warming up until 12:30.
Mm.
So the people who needed to practice playing the announcements and the national anthems for the semifinals later that day had to push the Americans off the field. So.
Get out of here, you Americans.
So Billy Randolph looks at me and he says, "Hey, you, now."
All right, so interesting. Well, thank you very much for doing the interview. I'm glad you got a few minutes to talk to him, and it was interesting.
It was. It was pleasant and to the point. Well, fairly much to the point.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that I thought of when I heard he was kicking around and got called to lead the team was, geez, you know, he could be managing in Japan.
He was managing in Japan for 2 days.
I mean, a Japanese team. Stop it.
Okay.
It's too early in the morning for you to take me literally. Wait at least until noon.
Well, no, yeah, I understand. Normally we record these things in the dead of night. Now it's in the dead of morning.
So, yeah, I was thinking, man, he'd be a good candidate to come over here and lead a Japanese team. I don't think he would. And I got to meet him briefly. We spoke before the championship game, before the team came onto the field to practice on Saturday. So I did get a chance to talk to him and say hi and thank him for being on the show. And you know, it was just as I suspected, though, when you hear him talking about how the team got ready, and I shouldn't even say got ready. I think they just came together. I don't think there was a lot of preparation in terms of getting ready for the tournament. They just had to get the bodies, get all the paperwork done, and make sure everybody was available. And then we'll work on the baseball when we get to the baseball.
I have a lot of sympathy for that. And for the effort that he and his coaching staff and his players went through, because, you know, the reporters were in the same bind. I mean, normally when you go to these tournaments, you get a list of all the players. I mean, the list might not always be right. And in this case, one Mexican pitcher was listed as a catcher. We found out at the press conference
yesterday, right, as the Japanese reporter was asking the question, and Mike Brito was saying, no.
No. And his player there who hit the home run and who had all of Mexico's hits said, no. He's a pitcher. Okay. So anyway, so we didn't have these good lists. The best, and I didn't notice, and I should have known, before the tournament started, the best place to go for the rosters was to news reports out of countries, and Team USA had a nice roster on the national team's website, which I wish I'd looked at before I had a chance to go to the U.S. practice to find out that two of the players were playing in Asia.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That would have been a good story.
Yeah,
especially since we had been speaking about guys, the older guys, the 27-year-old plus guys,
mm-hmm.
you know, looking for a job in Japan. This doesn't apply to the young hot prospects guys who will be on the 40-man rosters or eligible for the Rule 5 draft in a couple of weeks. But these 27 plus guys are probably thinking, wow, I could get used to playing here in front of 35,000-40,000 people.
Certainly, yeah. And so, I mean, you know, like I said, it was just as I suspected, but it seems like it might have even been a little bit worse in terms of them getting ready for the tournament. And, you know, when he said he didn't know that Japan had a lot of power arms coming out of the bullpen, and I'm like, I think those power arms you're talking about are those starters that who were being used as relievers, like Norimoto, Takahiro Norimoto and Ryan Ogawa. And, you know, this is not, maybe it was that the USA team didn't want to divulge too much, and that's probably part of it, because, well, you're laughing or snickering.
Yeah, I had my spy hat on, so yeah, that was that possibility.
You're snickering, but I just don't think they want to tell us everything about how they're prepping for the tournament. But still, I think if they do their homework, I think obviously they'll focus on the fact that these guys at least have made names for themselves in Japanese baseball. It's not like they have guys who are no-name guys, or, you know, what the USA sometimes does with its national teams is put a young, hot-shot college kid on the team just to get them experience. Still, I think just, you know, helter-skelter is what the word he used, and I thought, helter-skelter might have been a little bit more organized.
Yeah, Charles Manson was an organizational genius compared to this. So. Well, yeah, and a lot of troubles for all the teams because, you know, people just didn't know what was going on, and people didn't the depth of the organization, you know, the grassroots didn't go that deep this tournament. And I think they will. I put a blog out as the final was ending, and I think this is going to be a really good thing. And I'll tell you why. What I didn't write is that it's going to be a good thing because these kids
are going to come back to their teams, and they're going to have a wonderful experience in this tournament. You know, playing abroad, playing against professionals from different leagues, and seeing different kind of pitchers, and seeing different kind of ballparks. And they're going to be telling people, you know, what a great experience. And I remember speaking to people last year when the major leaguers came to Japan to play a tour against NPB. Uh-huh. And these guys were saying, oh, there's a tournament. Well, Jeremy Guthrie forgot quickly because we talked about it a year ago. And then this spring, some reporter asked Jeremy Guthrie if he knew there was a tournament this year. And he said, no, I never heard that.
Oh, no.
So he borrowed my memory. He took more.
Maybe he
away
forgot from, to borrow your memory.
Yeah, no, he got my best. That explains a few things. I was like, "What? What are you talking about? What international tournament?" So, but he was saying, "Yeah, and it's a great experience. And if I have a chance, I want to come back." And Salvador Perez said the same thing. I want to be here. So there's that motivation, and I think that is going to be part of the future. And anyway, that's what I wrote yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they said this, obviously this tournament was to replace the Baseball World Cup.
Correct.
And I don't think the Baseball World Cup had this much attention on it. So
Did not.
That's one thing. And obviously organizers, they're going through these, they're experiencing this for the first time, they're trying to establish. And I talked to a guy who's the Australian guy who was doing the play-by-play, and he said, look, it was all very last minute for him coming together and getting the gig, and it was all very last minute. And everyone you talk to, it seems it was a lot of things were very last minute. And so that's the basic theme. So I think the organizers were going through a learning experience, not just the young players. And I think the next time will probably be better.
Yeah, I'll elaborate a little bit on what Oscar, the PR guy for WBSC, told me. And the first day of the tournament in Taiwan, the website was working. It was slow, but it was working. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful stuff. The animated play-by-play was really good. It was intriguing. I loved it. And I'm going, wow, this is going to be fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I can watch one game on TV and follow another one on my computer. And, well, that fun lasted about 30 minutes because I guess it was so good that according to WBSC, they were getting a million visitors at a time.
Uh-huh.
On a website that they outsourced to somebody who's doing MLB.com or somebody who works with MLB.com. And they said, well, sorry, we didn't think you'd have a tournament. how come this is sorry, Jim Small. How come this is so much like MLB? You're the WBSC. There's no way you're going to have a tournament that more than 1,500 people at a time will want to watch.
1,500. Unbelievable.
So they couldn't update the website without crashing it.
Unbelievable. 1,500. That's just friends
you might
and
have
family.
Said, okay, you might have said 15,000 even, but still.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was 15,000. But and he said, we're thinking of suing them. But that's a WBSC talking, which means there's two sides to that coin. The WBSC was not ready to negotiate. They don't have the resources. They don't have the bodies to be out doing 100 things at once like MLB.com. They don't have offices around the world and Jim Smalls here and steering committees and staff working on stuff.
Yeah.
So that's the reality. But it was a really good first effort. I was very impressed.
Yeah.
Everything right. It did go right.
Yep. All right. Well, let's talk about the games now. I guess the biggest game for me was the semifinal and
the semifinal
because the other one wasn't such a big deal. You had a final four in which you had three blowouts and one really good game.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, I'm gonna call it the semifinal between Japan and South Korea. And,
yep.
It was Doomsday Thursday for Japan. They lost the Samurai Japan lost 4-3 to South Korea in an epic comeback in the ninth inning. And this was Thursday, of course, at Tokyo Dome. And I was shocked at the outcome. I mean, just floored at the outcome, but not so much the outcome itself, because you know you can always see these teams are arch rivals. I believe Korea was 2-1 at Tokyo Dome against Japan in international competitions or
well in full internationals, yes.
Yeah, so that team has been able to that manager Kim In-sik,
yeah.
In-sik has been
he was the manager all three games, so
yeah, he's been able to beat them, so he keeps his team prepared, calm and ready to play. And I guess the biggest shock for me, and I tweeted it the moment it happened, was Japan manager Hiroki Kokubo sending Takahiro Norimoto out to pitch the ninth inning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know, we talked about it on the previous week, and I said, hey, man, you know, and I know that you don't believe in this, but I just believe that the ninth inning and closers, they go together. You know, there's just something different about the ninth inning. Now, I know it's only three outs, but it's just a completely different animal. And that's not that Norimoto hasn't been in the ninth innings, because he pitches a lot of complete games, so he knows what to expect. However...
So you're saying he's not Masahiro Tanaka?
He's not. No. And, you know, it could have been any other pitcher. I just wouldn't have, he's had, you know, I was looking at Jason Koskrie and I said, look, they got two closers. It's either going to be.
They got four closers.
Well, wait, I said, I didn't think they were going to use the rookie.
The Yasuaki Yamasaki,
I didn't think was going to get a chance.
I still think of Matsui as being a rookie closer because this was the year he actually played a lot.
Right, right. And Yuki Matsui, second year guy. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he was the guy to go out for that ninth inning. So I thought it was going to be Sawamura since that's his mound.
And he wasn't even warming up.
We'll get to that. Sawamura. So it wasn't him. And once they got runners on base, I don't think Sawamura is the guy to bring in. I thought Hirotoshi Matsui from the Fighters would be the guy. But anyway, I just couldn't believe that after the game, Kokopo was saying, well, our plan was to throw Norimoto for two innings.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to hear that made me think, okay, well, this is not a guy who's thinking about this as a playoff game. This is a guy who's thinking about this as a regular season game and trying to save his arms or save the bullets for the final or something. I don't know.
I didn't see that.
Because there's no reason to do that.
Well, agreed. And I agree there's no reason to do that. And I don't think he was looking forward to the final. But having a listen to some of the things that his batting coach Atsunori Inaba was saying, I don't think it was about that. It was about the guy's role on the team, and this is how we're going to get the job done, and a plan and commitment and so on. But having said that, I don't think it was a bad plan. And where we disagree about ninth inning and closers is
what?
You're saying it's a different animal. I'm saying it's a matter of degree. You know, is it the same thing? No. But is it the same job? Yes. You know, can it work? It can work a lot. And the fact is, nobody knows. I mean, you can't come here and tell me, oh, well, it requires this and that, because the person who knows that doesn't exist.
Yeah. We can debate that on another.
Yeah, exactly. We could debate it till the cows come home, and right. we don't have any cows. Yeah. So that's yeah,
nobody
long.
Has any proof. I hear you, but
so,
still.
So yes, I agree with you that it is a more difficult challenge. Do I think Norimoto was fine? I thought that was a good plan, but if that's your plan, you got to be prepared with plan B.
B and plan C and plan D.
Exactly.
And evidently, that wasn't there. Those things were not on the table.
Things were missing. And I think that's where not having Norimoto pitch the ninth inning, but not having a backup plan in place when it was needed. Because he said, I wanted Matsui to come in, but I didn't want him to come in with the bases loaded. But when did you bring him in? With the bases loaded!
Which I, again, tweeted immediately, you know, this is not the guy. And I was talking to Jason as the game was going by, because you know, if you've sat next to me during games, I sit there and talk strategy and all this stuff all the time. And
you find time to tweet when you're talking strategy and watching the game at the same time.
I wasn't watching much of the game.
Okay, yeah, we were discussing that yesterday. What did you think about Norimoto's pitching? What do you mean, what did I think about Norimoto's pitching? I was trying to get my story ready when Korea won the game.
Right, right. So I said, you know, Yuki Matsui, not the guy you want with guys on base, because he has a tendency to walk people and... Yeah, it was just a mess. And it was evident that Japan didn't have a plan when the first two batters, who were pinch hitters off of Norimoto, got hits, and they went out and had a chat. And I'm like, they're just talking. And of course, you know, being in the press box, you can't see the TV feed unless you're sitting right behind somebody who has a TV. So you don't know who's warming up. So I just had to assume somebody was warming up. But when they didn't take him out, It dawned on me that they didn't have anybody ready to replace him. They didn't.
No, they had Matsui and Matsui were warming up,
but they weren't ready.
They weren't ready.
They weren't gotten up in time.
And that's when Kokubo's plan was to bring the guy in, to bring Matsui in with first base open, but then Norimoto hits the next batter.
Yeah, which was kind of questionable because that ball was over the plate just about.
Yeah, well, he was diving into a pitch and he recoiled a little bit, but the ball caught his uniform. So there.
Yeah, that ball was over the plate, and I think Norimoto wanted to argue that, but he just didn't. You know, he was so
They have fines for arguing in the WBC in the Premier 12, so we didn't see any of that.
Yeah, so, the problem, the base is loaded. You know, they bring in Hidetoshi Matsui, who's good at getting out of trouble because he usually gets himself into trouble anyway, and he gets out of it. So I thought he was the guy. And then Lee Dai-ho takes advantage of pitch right down the middle, because it didn't seem like Matsui was all that warmed up either.
That could well have been. Korea, and he got behind, and it was a lot of pitching behind. Yeah. And I'll tell you, based on how Norimoto pitched the inning before, I thought, no, this guy's, you know, he's locked in. Good, we're locked in, we're done. And of course, what's missing in that is that Shohei Ohtani was Shohei Ohtani for the Showtime.
Yeah, for 7 innings. And I thought it was the right move to take him out. And we know he has this cramping situation. And although it shouldn't have, you know, it shouldn't have been affecting him so much during the season, but it shouldn't have been a serious issue for him in this situation. But he did seem to tire in the seventh inning.
His
pitchers were getting up in the zone, and he was giving up more contact. So I think it was the right move to take him out.
Well, he was giving up contact, period, which was the sign. Wow, they got a loud foul off him.
Yeah.
And that's not what had been happening. So yeah, and I got this from my coworker yesterday. It's like, how come you don't leave Ohtani in? I think that's the Japanese DNA talking, but he had four closers and he had Norimoto, who had been effective and middle relief, so why? Why do you keep him in? Why do you keep him in and let him blow it? Because we got other people who can do that.
And they did. So, and I didn't see this so much as an upset, and I think people were looking at the rankings and all those things and thinking, yeah, I think these teams are fairly, well, I mean, it was, but it, I mean, these teams are fairly evenly matched in terms
they
of,
are.
In terms of the talent they bring. And you could, you know, I thought when the Koreans committed the error in the fourth inning and helped Japan get that 3-run lead, mm-hmm. that was going to be a difference, you know, who was not going to make mistakes like that. And it ended up not costing them because Japan made a fatal error. You know, it wasn't anything of commission. It was just it was the manager. It wasn't on the field.
Now, so. I guess I'll point out here is that there's a beautiful symmetry to these games. In the history is that in 2006 in the WBC, first of all, we had a very similar game ending at Tokyo Dome in the first round. The first WBC games were played at Tokyo Dome, and that round ended with Japan leading 2-1 in the eighth inning. And Tsuyoshi Nishioka, I believe it was Tsuyoshi Nishioka, you'll have to bear with me on that, hitting a slicing from the right-handed side, hitting a slicing line drive to right that was just barely fair. And the Korean outfielder, I believe his name was Lee Jin-young, made a diving catch to save two runs with two outs.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes into the top of the ninth, or the bottom of it might have been even the bottom of the ninth, with a one-run lead. And then Lee gets on base. The outfielder gets on base. And then Lee Sung-yup, who has just moved from the Lotte Marines to the Yomiuri Giants in his new home park, breaks it in a little bit mm-hmm. with a two-run homer. So we had that game, and I believe that was the top of the ninth, and then I believe Park Chan-ho closed that out in a dramatic, you know, just really emotional win. So there was that, and then a few weeks later, South Korea's gone through this tournament. They're 6-0. They've wiped out everybody in their first two rounds. Japan has lost to South Korea twice. Mm-hmm. They lost to the United States thanks to Bob Davidson.
We won't get into that.
No, we won't get into that. And they're 3-3, and they're playing Korea 6-0 in the semifinals. And that game is scoreless through six until Kosuke Fukudome, until somebody bunts, you know. And I'm not going to get into that. But anyway, Japan pulls away at the end, and they beat the Koreans. They handed the Koreans their only loss, and they go on to win the final, which is essentially a replay of this tournament.
Right, because that was Japan's only loss in the tournament.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Japan got a chance to play again, which was fair. The Koreans went home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's like, here's your loss. They gave them lollipops after they lost and said, here, suck on.
Stop it. All right.
Sorry, I'm never going to get that out. Okay.
All right, all right. So then the third place game on Saturday had Japan beating up on Mexico in a mercy rule game, basically. It's a called game, 7 innings, 11-1, 5 home runs for the Japanese team. Tetsuto Yamada had two of them. Shogo Akiyama, he hit a two-run shot in the seventh to end the game. And that was the team that we expected to see, a very relaxed Japanese team that just played really well.
Mm.
And then in the championship game was pretty much a snoozer. Korea wins 8-0. It's a very predictable outcome. In fact, I was kind of impressed that the group of USA players was able to keep it from being a mercy rule game
yeah.
in the final tournament. And they had a chance. They threw out a runner late in the game at the plate. And had that runner scored, they would have been within a run of getting mercy ruled. And it was a double play, right? It was the guy was trying to score on a sack fly. So that changed the inning, and they were able to finish out and play 9 innings. But if you look at the games other than the semifinal game of which I spoke earlier, Japan versus Korea, South Korea, the other games were combined 25-2 in the scores.
Mm.
And I don't think that's what the WBSC was looking for in this tournament. And I don't think that's what the fans wanted either. We wanted to see, as fans, I'm putting you and myself in that group, we wanted to see a very competitive Final Four, and it just wasn't.
Well, and the other thing was that it's unfortunate. Well, I don't know if it's unfortunate, but these things happen. You know, you got to have brackets somewhere.
Yeah.
And there was no way to, you know, there was no way to predict. I mean, had the Koreans beat the United States in their final group game, we would have seen a different, you know, we would have seen a different group.
Yeah.
So it's their fault.
Yeah, and you know, I saw somebody, one of the Canadian players who has played in Japan or is playing in Japan. I forgot who it was, but I know he's Canadian. It might have been Scott Matheson, but they were complaining about the format and saying, you know, Canada just now losing a game and they're out of the tournament. Well, I'm like, well, what do you expect? This is a, you know, you go to the medal round, you got to win. You know,
Canada
can't complain that you're losing.
Canada had, they were like Japan. Well, they were less like Japan in the sense they had probably 3 bad innings in that tournament, and one of them came with in the 8th inning against Mexico in their quarterfinals. They gave up. They basically booted away 3 runs, and a 3-1 lead turned into a 4-3 loss.
Hmm, where does that sound familiar?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, the Korean team played really well. Congratulations to the South Koreans for winning the first Premier 12, and we look forward to the next one. You know, I don't know that the entire tournament was an abject failure, because I think, you know, we talked about the fact that the preparation was, they weren't very prudent in the preparation in certain areas. I talked to Craig Koenig, who was doing the play-by-play again for the people who had play-by-play available via streaming. We talked about the last minute aspects of the preparation, and I talked to the WBSC's executive director Michael Schmidt, and I asked him why we didn't get the streaming, why it wasn't available. This is the internet, and he talked to me about that. He talked to me about the fact that they would rather have seen, just for interest's sake, they would have rather seen Japan and Korea, South Korea, playing in the final. But he did say that this was the first time, and that they're going to work harder to improve on their preparation, get maybe at some point get some of the major league players to appear in this thing. The final ended up being kind of a dud, and that was a drawback for the event as a whole. But I think overall they were kind of happy with the way the games went on the field.
Yeah, I think I'm very happy that it went as well. Disappointed that it didn't do better, but yeah, for a first effort and to put them on the map, you know, this is big.
Yeah.
This is big, and has a good future ahead of it.
Yep. All right, let's make a seamless transition back to NPB and talk about the best nines. The awards are probably coming out this week. Was it Tuesday or Wednesday? I can't remember.
Tuesday.
Yeah, it seems right to me. So, anyway, I don't like the awards so much. I think the awards, these individual awards, are kind of like for the loser teams to have some consolation. And, you know, everybody's out to win.
Right.
You know, nobody wants individual. I mean, people do want individual awards and they want to achieve things, especially in baseball, because obviously when you go up against a pitcher, it's mano a mano. But the categories, you know, homer titles and all those things are something to look for when your team's not winning. And you say, you know, fans look at it and say, well, at least we have this, or at least we have that, or
yeah,
it brings well, some, it brings good people out to the park and keeps the interest in the team. But if you're not winning,
In Japan, it's I've wrestled with this quite a while, and I'm not much of a wrestler, but the contradiction, it's an inherent contradiction, or it's a seeming contradiction in Japan where everything is. Purportedly, everything is about the team, but then the team will bend over backwards to make sure an individual wins an award.
Yeah.
And it's not really a contradiction, but you have to look pretty hard to find it. But we have this Japan holds up these individual awards. You know, they put the pedestal is so much higher here than it is in MLB.
Yeah.
When it's supposedly all about the team and not about the individual, so that's a long cultural story which we're not going to get into here. But
yeah, so yeah,
but it's curious.
In the end, it's nice to be recognized, I'm sure, but the truth is you lost a lot of times, and not everybody, but these awards go. These are like consolation or participation.
I do like the best nine awards though, because I like thinking about who had the best season, who contributed the most, and you know, in these nice little pigeonholed categories. Although we have one guy who kind of escapes the pigeonhole.
Oh, okay, yeah, one, maybe two. All right, so in the Central League, where do you want to start? You want to start on the mound? We'll
just go start one. Yeah, still 1-2-3, 1-9. Yeah.
All right. Well, in the Central League on the mound, I guess Kenta Maeda is going to take home the best nine for me.
Okay, interesting.
I mean, I like Chris Johnson, I like Miles Michaelis, but I think I'm going to have to, when you factor in the defense and what the guy means to the team, I'm going to go with Kenta Maeda.
Hmm. Oh, I was, you know, you on John's notes, he had Chris Johnson down there, and I eventually went to Chris Johnson. And I thought, I'm surprised it's Chris Johnson, because I know I'm used to John's we'll call them arguments for argument's
sake. Snarky attitude, is that what you're trying
to say? Yeah, that's snarky attitude about John's arguments. But I'm familiar with his tact, so I figured Maeda, you know, it's got to be Maeda for him because of what he means for the team and the fact that he's the ace and blah, 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 and so on and so on. So I'm not surprised he picked Maeda. And also, to be honest, you could, as I said about the Pacific League's shortstops, you could throw half of them into a hat and pull them out, and you wouldn't be it'd be hard to find any difference.
Yeah, I think Chris Johnson was awesome, and there's mm-hmm. just no wrong answer here. I think Miles Michaelis saved that Giants rotation, because if it weren't for him, they would have really been suffering.
Sure.
Know, they got some good performances from a couple of rookies, including Takagi, but, you know, he saved him. But anyway, catcher. I think there's only one player here, Yuhei Nakamura, and that's it in the Central League. There's no other candidate, in my opinion.
Yeah, and this is pigeonhole number one. I mean, you could give Shinosuke Abe he had more overall value, but he played first base more than he caught, so let's leave him there.
Okay. First base?
My first baseman is Mauro Gomez.
This was another one. I mean, yes, he had a good season, and he's the best of the candidates because I think still with the way that he played defense, I think Jose Lopez is a good candidate for me. But, you know, I would just go ahead and say none of the above. That's
well,
mean.
I would pick Gomez. And you know, and the problem with the Tigers players is the same problem with, you know, that we used to have with the Dragons players as hitters in the previous decade, is their park takes so much out of their numbers.
Hmm.
And that if you adjust for that, the Tigers have some huge bats. And Gomez's offense was so good. I mean, the numbers don't look like they're in the same ballpark because they're not made in the same ballpark.
Right.
But I had Mauro Gomez winning this by easily the best.
Okay.
I mean, his defense is nothing special, but, you know, it's first base.
Right, right. It's second base, and I guess you say the Tetsuto Yamada that there's just nobody in his league at this point.
Oh, you're not going to go with Kikuchi because he didn't win the MVP?
Hashtag
high heat.
No, I'm not. That's Tori Yamada. Just stop it. Don't pick at scabs. Just don't do it.
It's hard sometimes.
All right, shortstop.
Now, here's... I have Toritani.
Yeah, I knew you would.
Yeah, he's because
you have
just,
him every year.
Yeah, well, because he's such a hitter. I mean, he's such a hitter. He's now you could in John's argument detract from the fact that he doesn't really play a good defensive shortstop anymore. He's good enough to leave out there, but you really want somebody else playing shortstop. So can he be the best nine? I don't know. But as in terms of overall value, I'd take him.
Yeah, you know, I put Sakamoto just because of his defense, and to me, I just put a slash there. They're both the same. One's going to give you a little bit better offense in some situations, and someone's going to give you a little bit better defense, and in the end, they probably even out.
I put them the other way. I mean, not even a little bit better. I would say quite a lot. Well, Sakamoto's a much better fielder at this stage in his career. Toritani is still a much better hitter. He's a better hitter now than Sakamoto was on track to be a couple of years ago.
Okay, I'll give you that. All right. Third base.
Easy. Easy peasy, baby.
Well, yeah,
Kawabata.
Shingo Kawabata, although defensively, I'm just not...
And this is the guy who put Hector Luna on his notes.
I put Hector Luna on the notes for this offense. I just put him down. Like I said, I was looking, again... Kawabata is going to get it because he had such a great offensive season, but defensively...
But his defense is good enough to keep him at third base.
Yeah, in fact,
that has value.
Yesterday, it was like he had a shot hit straight at him yesterday at Tokyo Dome by one of the Mexican players, and you could tell by the way his knees shook. It's like, oh my God, you know, it was his first reaction. And it was a one hopper that, you know, hit him right in the gut.
Of course, you have to realize he hasn't played much in the last month.
Yeah, it looked like it on that one. All right, now we get to the outfield, and this is the problem. I'm sure you can find three guys, and they make sense, but I'm just not impressed with the outfield in the Central League. Who did you have?
Tsutsugo, Kajitani, Fukudome.
Yeah, I think those are the only three guys you could have. And there's some, you know, Yohei Oshima of the Dragons really is a really good player.
He's a good fielder.
Yoshihiro Maru is...
He's a good player, too. He's a tremendous leadoff guy. But he had a lousy season.
Yeah, they both underperformed. Those are the first guys I think of when I think of, okay, outfield in the Central League.
Fukudome was, you know, it's like... They got the player they expected when they re-signed him from the majors, you know. So yeah. he had a quality season, and good for him.
Yeah. So I think there were only three guys. I don't think there were any other guys you could throw out there.
I'm surprised if Maru doesn't win one of those awards, though, because everybody just thinks he's the guy.
Yeah. No.
They gave him a Golden Glove he didn't deserve. They gave, you know, so why not give him the best nine he doesn't deserve?
Hashtag high heat.
Okay. All right. What about the Pacific League? You start with your pitcher.
My pitcher is Dennis Sarfate, and I'll make a brief comment that I did to John before the show. I used to hear this at this period, this time of the year, a stream of rants. You could get it on YouTube about relief pitchers and awards. But just the way the starting pitcher's usage has gone down and down and down and down in Japan, and closers are getting more and more innings and being used in more situations, more tie games, the value of the best closers is shooting through the roof. I would say more than half of the top 10 pitchers in Japan, or at least in terms of seasons and how they're used, the most valuable are relievers, are closers, and Dennis Sarfate could well have been the most valuable pitcher in Japan this past year.
Whoa, we're having a little earthquake. Are you feeling that?
I am now.
Oh, okay.
I'm on a time delay.
You're on a time delay, okay. Yeah, well, this is interesting for me because I'm going to pick Shohei Ohtani just because he had a really good season, in my opinion, and
He had a Hall of Fame first half.
Yeah, he was very much stronger in the second first half. Well, I don't know, because he had all those cramping issues in the first half too, where he had to come out of games, but he didn't seem to suffer from that as much in the second half. So I think his second half was okay in terms of what he did on the mound. He might not have gotten the the wins and the strikeouts maybe in the second half, but I think it was just as effective. But it's interesting that, you know, you're coming over to my side in a bit, because I remember when Takuya Asawa of the Chunichi Dragons won the MVP, that you just you weren't very much on board with that.
Well, he didn't deserve, because in my opinion, he didn't deserve it. He wasn't getting, he did have a lot of innings, but he was competing against starters who were throwing 260 innings and were very effective.
And my issue at that time was that it's what he meant to his team, and that he threw these important innings. And remember,
I'm not coming over to that side.
I went through all the games and said he came in when they were down by a run, or the game was even, or they were up by a run in X number of games, and he threw some really important innings for them.
And you give him credit. You give him credit for that.
So,
but you don't give him you'd say those innings are three times more valuable than the guy who's out there the first time. So
okay, we're not going to debate this, but they weren't for the team. They weren't.
So
they
I'm not going over to John's side. So
you're picking Sarfate, which means that you're at least interested in it. You're leaning that way.
No, I'm not leaning that way. The game is changing that way.
Well, I mean, but still, he didn't throw as many innings as Ohtani.
But he did pitch more innings than relievers are used to pitching in Japan.
Well, we're not comparing him to relievers.
No, but we're comparing him to starters who are throwing fewer innings.
I think we're going to have to talk about this later in the year. All right, we don't have much time for the rest of the year,
I'm not giving any more value to relievers than I was before. Okay. I'm just saying that the conditions have changed.
All right, catcher.
Catcher, we could do this two ways, but since we've got a DH award, we're going to go with Hikaru Ito.
You know, I had Ito on there, and I think he was really good. And then I thought about it, and the more I thought about it, I'm going to pick none of the above because I think Sumitani was really good defensively, but he's never really been a great hitter, and yeah, he might be. I can't really consider him the best at the position. He's the best probably defensive catcher. My buddy Motohiro Shima of the Eagles is good, but I mean, I just nobody, none of the above.
I like Ito,
and I like him.
He had a mediocre year, and he was still the best. Now the guy who, if his catching improves at all and allows him to catch more, Kensuke Kondo.
Yeah,
we'll put these guys. You know, he'll make people won't be able to pronounce Sumitani anymore.
Yeah, they'll forget who these guys are.
And I'll tell you, when he was the starting catcher, the Fighters were 31-21, and needless to say, they didn't do that well the rest of the season when he was the DH.
Yeah.
And he hit better as a catcher than as a DH.
Okay,
so
first base.
First base, Shonakata.
Yeah, I'm there with you. Second base, I got Luis Cruz, and I think it's hands down.
Nah, Kensuke Tanaka.
Yeah, I really like him. I just, you know, Luis, for me, the way that he played defense this year, and we know that Kensuke Tanaka was hurt a lot of the season for the Fighters, so I expect him to actually be better next year when he's healthy, but I'm going to give this to Cruz.
Tanaka was better than Cruz when he was hurt, so I don't have a problem. I mean, Cruz had tremendous highlights, as you pointed out last week. He had tremendous highlights, and Tanaka was—he was just pretty good. Whenever he was playing, he was pretty good.
Yeah, he's good. No doubt about it. All right, third base.
Third base, easy. Nobuhiro Matsuda. No, not really a contest.
Yep, and then shortstop.
Shortstop, yeah, I have Nakashima Takuya, but again, this is I think he's the best.
Yeah.
He just moved over from second base, like, oh, shortstop. This is the hard position, isn't it? Okay.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. Like you said before, there's guys you could pick out of a hat, and they're almost about the same. But I just like Imamiya, what he does, and he really became a leader on that infield too. And
I'd give you get some credit for that. I think.
Okay, at third base, I do want to give Takuya Nakamura and Brandon Laird some acknowledgement, because they both had some. Brandon didn't have a great season, but I think he gets acknowledgement because he ended up hitting 30 plus home runs, and Nakamura is just really, you know, he's steady. So
those guys were they were a notch below Matsuda, but if Matsuda's not there, it would have been a great race.
Yeah. All right, in the outfield, there's a lot of guys to pick from.
I have Shogo Akiyama, Yuki Inagita, Ikuhiro Kiyota. Yeah. Sound familiar?
Yeah. I got no problem with that. Those are the guys I'm going to go with. Go ahead, DH.
I think I dropped the ball on this one. I think I picked Alfredo De Spina. It should have been Kensuke Kondo.
Exactly. Yeah.
Who could have wanted his catcher or DH, just like Ohtani last year could have wanted his pitcher or DH.
Well, Kondo was the guy for me, and one of our Twitter followers, you know, has always talked about how asked us earlier in the season about him being a best kept secret in Japan, and
right,
and he really is. You know, a lot of people don't even realize that he catches. I see him as a DH. I think they probably want to move him and get him a different position, and that's why they DH him, because they don't want to. I don't know. We'll have to ask him what the plan is with him, but I see him as either a DH or one day maybe an outfielder, first baseman or something. But the problem is they have a couple of guys, and this is a team that really puts a priority on defense, so they don't want to just put somebody out there just to get their bat in the lineup. And you know, with the young kid Asayama,
this guy's a player.
It's going to be hard for Konda to end up in the outfield in that.
Oh man, no, this guy's team, got so. The gun. He's got the gun in NPB, and he can fly. So yeah.
All right, making a seamless transition. Just a couple of notes. Osen Hwang of the Hanshin Tigers is going to go to the major leagues, and we didn't have time to talk about him last week. Now, we haven't spoken about his jump in particular. I was impressed with his velocity when he came here, but not by his consistency, and I was concerned about his off-speed stuff and his unwillingness to throw it in important games and important counts, and just to stick with that fastball got him into trouble last year in the playoffs and in the Japan Series in particular. But I think you know, he does throw some off-speed pitches. I think, you know, we were just looking at a guy who basically had overpowered people for a long time, and I think he wasn't able to do that as much in Japan, and I think he'll be able to do that even less in the major leagues. So, but I think they're going to force him to throw his off-speed stuff a little bit more. So I can see him, you know, being a seventh inning guy, maybe an eighth inning guy somewhere, or just a matchup guy. But I can see him. Contributing in the majors at least for 1 or 2 years.
Oh yeah, I think he's a fairly good comp for Ryota Igarashi. Probably a better fastball now. And I think the comment I made about Matsuda last week is that you know, he's a smart guy who can make the adjustments. It's only a matter of how far he's willing to go to make the adjustments. You know, to change the kind of pitching. You know, if it's a case of what do I need to do to be here, you know, teach me that and I'll do it.
Okay.
As opposed to this is the kind of pitcher I am, you know, don't touch my stuff.
Yeah, and that's going to be his challenge, you know, making some adjustments and bringing on or just taking on whatever the coaches are trying to convey to him and implementing that into his game in the States. And I think he can be useful. So, but he has that adjustment to make and it'll be there. All right. Now, last week we were talking about the Gold Gloves and you had something to say about shortstops and we never got back to it. And one of our listeners say, hey, what happened?
He said, okay.
On Twitter.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I was, you know, and I tweeted right after that discussion on Twitter about, you know, what are the four criteria, the priorities for selecting Golden Gloves. And they were, one, looks good catching the ball. Two, has a good reputation as a fielder.
Mm-hmm.
Three, is a good hitter on a good team at his position.
And I jumped in and chimed in and said, well, I think before four or before –
I had four as objective analysis, and John said, wow, fourth, that's pretty high.
Yeah, I said, I think he looks good in his uniform goes before objective analysis.
That's the Shota Dobayashi vote right there.
Hashtag high heat.
There's a blast from the past.
The reasons of, you know, when you look at why Hayato Sakamoto didn't win a Golden Glove that he deserved and Takashi Toritani won a Golden Glove he didn't deserve, you have to realize Toritani qualified as, I guess, under Category 2, a guy who has a great reputation, and 3, a guy who's a really good hitter. Hayato Sakamoto fails. You know, it looks good in the uniform, so he gets the number. He gets number four, but his reputation is since he was a rookie as a guy who makes a lot of errors, who boots easy plays. He boots an easy play now and then, but he's come a long way. His offense hasn't improved a lot, but his defense is vastly better than it was when he started.
Right, right. And, you know, I had somebody, one of our listeners was saying, you know, was pointing out that somebody didn't make any errors. And I'm like, hey, I never really look at errors as the biggest key for whether somebody's going to win a Gold Glove. Not for me. You know, I want to see guys making plays that, I talked to Tony Barnett earlier this year, and I think he said about KG Ubiki was that he makes all the routine plays.
Yes.
And that's important. You've got to make the routine ones because those are the ones that everyone's expecting you to make. But you've got to make some of the plays that aren't routine look routine. And
you know, okay, I want to have a shout out to KG Obiki. And now this is it sounds like a kind of a spurious comment that somebody else you would hear from somebody else. But his acquisition, which I didn't like because he's really a poor hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Was a part of almost a master plan for the Swallows. You know, they wanted a shortstop who could be in the middle of the defense and sort of help everybody else with their game. And you know what happened? And it wasn't just him,
mm-hmm.
but the plan with having, you know, not all parts of the plan worked, as we know, but having Obiki there, you know, with Yamada on his left and Kawabata on his right and Nakamura taking over as he was already the number one catcher in games caught, but he became the number one catcher in name. That switch and more a new manager, more influence with the infielding coach just transformed the Swallows defense. And I think Obiki, especially with the double plays, the Swallows went from the worst double play team in the Central League to one of the best in Japan.
Yeah.
That was huge. They don't have that. They don't have the ERA.
And that's important. And that, you know, he's going to make errors. That doesn't mean he's not a Gold Glove potential.
Well, Obiki's not a Golden Glove winner, but boy, that influence was huge.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, my point is don't just count the errors and say that this guy deserves a Golden Glove because he didn't make the errors or a Gold Glove. Golden Glove in Japan, Gold Glove is what I grew up with. But anyway. Because a number of errors can be misleading too. Sometimes it's the scorer's decision that ends up putting the error,
to certain guys. The player in question was more of a matter of how come, you know, I'm not certain he can spell double play in any language.
All right, no questions this week, but if you have any, please send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat at JBW Podcast, or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. And, you know, we got a lot of questions, but we always accept comments as well. If you just want to comment about the show, you have a comment about baseball in general, we'll accept that as well, and we can talk about it. It can be a talking point on the show, especially we'll need them in the off season when we don't have much going on. And in fact, we will be back in a couple of weeks. This is going to be part of our off-season training here, chasing program.
This is what,
take some time off and sleep late and go to sleep at a decent hour. So we will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Enjoy your off-season. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Ciao. Thanks for the season, John.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.